At the funeral of a rich London banker, the final hymn as the coffin was being carried out was that great hymn, "Guide me, O thou great Jehovah." I'm sure you know it. Unfortunately, there was one small typo in one of the verses. Instead of that wonderful line, "Land me safe on Canaan's side," you know it? Unfortunately, one of the letters, a Y, was changed for an E. "Land my safe on Canaan's side." We're talking about money tonight. Sensitive subject, isn't it? As Brits, we often don't like to talk about money very much. So I thought I'd read you some words from a group of American philosophers, 1980s, very eminent philosophers who were interested in the subject of money as a sort of philosophical concept. Here are some of their wise words. "Money is the key to end all your woes, your ups and your downs, your highs and your lows. Would you tell me last time that love bought your clothes? It's like that, and that's the way it is." Huh. Got a picture of those philosophers up on the screen, please. Thanks, Alex. Actually, it's not just Run DMC and co. who are always going on about money. If you read through the Gospels, you'll find that Jesus talked about money. Empty my piggy bank. Jesus talked about money more than almost anything else. People think, oh, you know, Jesus, I'm sure his favorite sin to attack it was probably, you know, adultery or, you know, sexual immorality or something like that. But actually, if you read the accounts of his life, he spoke at least five to ten times more often about this, about greed, than about that. Read through the Gospels, see for yourself. Frankly, if as preachers here we spoke about money even half as often as Jesus did, we probably wouldn't have a church. You guys would all go somewhere else because they always talk about money there. So here's the question for us tonight. Up on the next slide, please. Thanks, Alex. Why did Jesus go on about money so much? Why did he go on about money so much? Well, two reasons. I want to give us two reasons tonight. Have the next slide, please, Alex. Thank you. First reason, follow the money and you will find something is controlling you. Follow the money and you'll find something is controlling you. Have a look at that famous verse. Shah read it. Famous verse, verse 21. "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And notice the assumption behind those words. The assumption is that you do have a treasure. It doesn't say if you have a treasure, your heart will be there. It says simply where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Everyone has a treasure. Or in other words, everyone has something that is most precious to them, most precious. Something that if I have that, if I have it, then everything else will be okay. And if I don't have it, then nothing else will really be okay. You know, it's not just a branch on the tree. This is the trunk of the tree. It's the trunk that holds all the branches, all the other branches up. There'll be different things for different people, what your treasure is. It might be a relationship, might be an ambition you have, or your career. It'll be different things for different people, but all of us have a treasure. And here's the thing, whatever that treasure is for you, that will come to control your life. Whatever your treasure is, it will come to control your life, because it's not something you want, it's something you must have. It's not an optional thing. You must have this thing. It's so foundational, so important to you that you will spend anything to get this thing. That's what your treasure is. If you like, in the language of verse 24 there, that last paragraph, it is your master. If something is your master, if it's not God, it will be something else. You have to have one, and you can only have one. So this idea of what is your treasure, that will be the thing that controls you. Now, if you've been with us throughout this kind of series of the Sermon on the Mount, you'll have heard us come at this same sort of idea from all sorts of various different angles. So we've had things like, if you had one wish, what would it be for? We've talked about reward. Well, Jesus talked about reward. He says, we said, what is your highest, what's the highest reward, the best reward you can possibly imagine? What do you daydream about? Where does your imagination go to lie down and have a rest? You know, or we've talked about the triangle. Remember the triangle? You say, you know, this triangle and the bottom line is everything in your life, all your people in your life, all your possessions, all on there on that bottom line. As you go further up, not quite as much space, so you've got to drop a few things. And you go further up, you've got to drop a few more things. Only half a dozen people or things left, and you go up a bit more. Two or three, your most important two or three things, until finally you get to the very top of the triangle, only space for one thing. What's that one thing for you? If it really came down to it, what would be the one thing left at the top of the triangle? Remember all those things? All those things, these are ways of basically trying to get across it. What is the thing that you treasure? What, therefore, controls you? And I hope that all these sort of ways we've been coming at it will be helpful and sort of clarifying for you. I found them helpful and clarifying. But even so, I still find that I get a bit confused and it gets a bit muddy in my head. Because I don't know, maybe you're more self-aware than me. But I find when someone puts a question like that to me, you know, that or what's your highest reward or something like that, I think to myself, well, that's a jolly good question. Good question. Answer, I don't know. Honestly, it's kind of hard to say. You know, I know that God is very important to me, and I know that there are other things that are very important to me too, and it's just complicated. And sometimes it's really hard to know. You know, I just had 3 hours sleep last night and a cup of coffee. Does that affect things? I don't know. It's really hard to work out, isn't it? What's really going on deep down, really inside the real heart of Leon? And we can sort of tie ourselves in knots, can't we? Kind of navel-gazing, you know, and how can I, who's the real me? What's really controlling me deep down? And you can feel sort of like trying to peer down to the bottom of a murky lake. And you're trying to see, and the more you move to try and see, the more it stirs up and the harder it is to see. Or it's like trying to untangle really tangled wires, and the more you pull, the worse it gets. And so when the preacher man says, what's really, really most important to you? I think to myself, well, I'll just say God. Probably what he wants to hear, isn't it? Do you ever do that? I do that sometimes. Just say God, it's the easiest thing, isn't it? It's so hard, isn't it, to work out? So hard to work out what really drives us and motivates us, isn't it? Well, Jesus says to me in verse 21, he says, Leon, you're an idiot. It's not that hard to work out. It really isn't. You don't have to like kind of light a candle and sit in a dark room and hum to yourself to work out. All you've got to do is go and log on to NatWest Online Banking. It's really easy. Follow the paper. Where does your money most effortlessly go to? Where does it flow towards? You know how the thing is, you know, some things are really easy to spend money on, aren't they? You know, you just think 10, 20, 30, 40. It just sort of flies out of your hand. You don't even know you're spending it. And then other things, if I have to spend £10 on that, I feel really aggrieved, I feel really bitter about it. £10 on that, whereas other things, it just sort of flies, doesn't it? You don't even know you're spending your money. It's like some things are at the top of the hill, and to sort of push the water of your money up the hill is really, really hard work, isn't it? And you think, oh. Other things are at the bottom of the hill, and the water of your money just sort of flows towards them. It's really hard to stop it going towards those things. Your treasure is what your money most effortlessly, most easily just flows towards. It doesn't even feel like you're spending money. I'll tell you what it is, how this works out for me. I sort of have to put a shirt on, don't I, to stand up here and preach. But, you know, most of you know me, you've seen me during the rest of the week, and so you can tell that I find it very difficult to spend money on clothes. Poor old Charlotte, she despairs. My favourite pair of shoes have had a hole in the front of them for the last 6 months. I mean, poor girl, he's married to this. I find it really hard to spend money on my clothes, but I find it quite easy to spend money on books. Again, that probably doesn't surprise some of you. What's going on there? Why is that? But doesn't it show what I treasure more? It's not that important to me that you think of me as sort of well-dressed and that fashionable and that sort of thing. That's not that important to me. But obviously it is important to me that you think of me as being knowledgeable and well-read. Now, you might be the opposite way around that. You might find it very easy to spend money on clothes and appearance and so on. But do you see the point? The point is your treasure is what your money just easily goes towards. Here are two more common treasures, status and security. If I treasure security, if that's what controls me, then I'll find it really easy to save money. It'll be really easy to put just another couple hundred this month into my savings, into the portfolio. That'll be an easy thing. It'll feel easy for me to do that. But it'll be really hard for me to spend money on goods and services that are expensive. Now, people may look at me and they think, oh, well, gosh, Leon lives very frugally, doesn't he? He's very careful with his money. Look how he dresses. But actually, of course, that'd be dead wrong, wouldn't it? I spend lots of money. I just spend it on what I really treasure, on security, on control, certainty in an uncertain world. I can look at my quarterly investment report and think, that's how I know life's going to be okay. The future's going to be okay. I know I'm secure because of that. My treasure is security, certainty, and my money just flows towards that. Another treasure will be status. It's almost the opposite in a way. You know, this is where it just feels really good to be able to wear the sort of clothes that I wear and go on the sort of holidays I go on and live the place where I live. It feels really good. That's a big part of who I am as a person, how I think of myself and how I want other people to think of me. And in that case, it'll be really easy for me to spend my money on goods and services, clothes, holidays, nice cars. And it'd be really hard for me to spend my money on savings, to save my money. And it looks very different on the outside, but the principle is exactly the same. Your money just flows downhill really easily towards what you most treasure. You know, and I can stand up here and say, I love God above everything else. You know, I'm a minister, I love God above everything else. But if I don't find my money just flows so easily towards charity and towards ministry, if I don't find it hard to not spend money on those things, then it's pretty thin, isn't it? Clearly something else is what I really treasure. So do you see the point? Follow the money and you will find what is controlling you. In fact, it's probably the best way to find that. It's the best way to map the contours of your heart, to really get down and see the terrain. The best way, 100% follow the money and you will find what's controlling you. There's no better test than that, according to Jesus. Second point, and here's where it gets even more scary. Follow the money and you'll find something is controlling you without you even realizing it. Something is controlling you, but you don't even see it. You don't even realize it. This is what verses 22 and 23 are about. That middle paragraph, sometimes it gets rather glossed over because people sort of think it's a kind of Monty Python moment, you know. And now for something completely different, unrelated. But Jesus was a pretty good preacher, so we should probably give him a bit more credit than that. You know, so if paragraph one is about money, and then paragraph three is about money, take a wild stab in the dark what you think, you know, paragraph two is going to be about, right? Let's read it. Verse 22 and 23. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Jesus is saying that your treasure, the thing you treasure most, the thing that controls you, your treasure affects your life the way your eyes affect your body. Okay, I'll say that again. Your treasure affects your whole life the way your eyes affect your whole body. What do you think would happen if I get someone up here and I blindfold them? And I say, here, here's a blindfold. I bought this so I could sleep on the sleeper train, and it works really well. It's magic. It's a good blindfold. You can't see anything from this. I say, right, I want you to... I spin around a few times, and I say, right, I want you now to run over to Drake Circus and back again, okay? I want you to go and get me an Oreo from McDonald's. Run over to Drake Circus and run back again. What do you think's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to them? How's their body going to be at the end of that process when their eyes are dark? How's their body going to be? At the very best, you'd get back, wouldn't you? Bumped and battered and bruised. Because do you see, if your eyes are blind, then it's like the whole of you is blind, isn't it? If your eyes are in darkness, then really your arms and your legs and your brain are in darkness, aren't they? And you're going to be stumbling around, bashing your shins, falling downstairs, making the wrong choices and not even knowing that you're making the wrong choices, coming to wrong conclusions. If my eyes are in darkness, my whole body is in darkness, isn't it? And in just the same way, if my treasure is good, in other words, if it is God, then my whole life will be full of light, and I'll see the way I'm going through life. If my treasure is bad, if it's anything but God, my whole life will be full of darkness, and I'll find myself stumbling around and bashing my shins on reality, stubbing my toes, barely avoiding oncoming traffic. I'll make crazy choices with my life that ruin me now and in eternity. I'll make crazy choices, but I won't even realize they're crazy choices. Now I won't know how to make better choices because I can't see. My whole life is in darkness. I mean, just look at those two options. Look at verse 19 and 20. Look at those two options there. Two investment options for you, okay? Verse 19, you can make a risky investment that yields you very low returns. Or, verse 20, you can make a safe investment that yields you very high returns. Which is better? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious which is better. You don't need a PhD in economics to work out which is better. And yet, so few people actually do verse 20. Right? So few people do that. Even as Christians, we spend most of our lives stuck there in verse 19, don't we? Even after becoming a Christian, being a Christian for many years. And so we think to ourselves, well, how could anyone be so stupid? How could they be so short-sighted? How could they be so blind? But that's just the point, isn't it? We are blind. When we treasure anything apart from God, that's what we do to ourselves. And then we're surprised that life is difficult and we make bad choices. And I'm afraid it gets even worse than that. If you look at the end of verse 23, it's even worse. End of verse 23. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Jesus is saying that the light we live by is actually darkness. In other words, we are so blind, we're so blind that not only have we stopped seeing, we have stopped seeing that we've stopped seeing. Do you see? Here I am stumbling through life, bashing my shins on reality, stubbing my toes, oncoming traffic, and I don't even realize that I'm doing it. I think that this is how life's meant to be. There's no better way. What better way is there to live life? You know the saying, don't you, that no one is more blind than the person who thinks they can see. And no one is more trapped than the one who thinks they're free. It's what makes that great film, The Matrix, so haunting, isn't it? Because if you haven't seen it, it's about basically a prison. A prison so perfect that the people in it don't think they're in prison. They think they're free. And no one tries to escape from a prison they don't think they are in, do they? And Jesus says that is the situation you are in when you treasure anything apart from me, apart from God. It traps you in a prison so perfect you don't even think you're in prison. Something is controlling you controlling your life, and you don't even realize it. And by the way, that is how someone ends up being a Pharisee. Pharisees have been the sort of target, haven't they, all the way through the Sermon on the Mount. The problem with the Pharisees is not just that their heart's in the wrong place, it's that they can't see their heart's in the wrong place. They really think they are on God's side. They really do, and they can't see otherwise. Let me finish by just trying to offer you, it's been trying to be a bit less abstract, a bit more concrete. Here are three practical steps you could take this week if you wanted to in response to this passage. Number one, if you have that up, please, next slide. Thank you. Ooh. That's painful, isn't it? It's painful. We don't want to ask the hard questions of ourselves, do we? What really is downhill for my money? Where does it most easily flow towards? What's the thing that's got me by the heart and is dragging me around through life? We don't want to ask the hard questions ourselves, let alone get anybody else to do that for us. We don't want it to come to light. We want to be blind to it. Do you see? And this is precisely the power that money has, the power of greed. It has the power to stop you asking questions, to blind you to how you make money and how you spend money. Money has the power to stop you asking questions about how you make money and how you spend money. Isn't it amazing that we are here, I am here, in one of the top 10 richest societies of all time in human civilization, and yet I am so totally sure that I am not guilty of greed that I don't even ask the questions. That's the power of money. Number two, pray for the humility to suspect yourself. You see, if verse 23 is true, you see verse 23, if that is true, what is the symptom that I am really under the thumb of some power apart from God? What's the symptom that I'm really controlled by something? If verse 23 is true, the sign would be, I really don't think that I am. Do you see? I'm stuck in the matrix. I can't see anything else. The symptom that I'm really under the thumb of evil is that I don't think that I am. If you believe the gospel, though, the gospel is that I relate to God on the basis of Christ's performance, not my own performance. God loves me because of how Jesus lived and how he died, not because of how I lived. If you believe that, then you can afford to be really honest with yourself. If you know that God already sees you to the bottom and loves you to the skies, you can afford to be honest, can't you? You can be humble and you can say, yes, this is me. Even the parts that look pretty squeaky clean and godly and good, probably far more dark than I really want to admit. And that is the difference, really, between a Christian and a Pharisee. You see, a Christian can suspect themselves. A Pharisee never can. A Pharisee cannot admit there is something really, really wrong with them. They won't see it. They've got an eye problem as well as a heart problem. Christians have heart problems too, by the way. Lots of them. The difference is, if you believe the gospel, you don't feel the desperate need to cover your eyes to what's there. So pray for the humility to suspect yourself. And finally, number three, pray for a fresh vision of God's worth. A fresh vision of God's worth. As the old hymn goes, when I see you as you are, I'll praise you as I ought. When I see you as you are, I will praise you as I ought. If only we could actually see God as he really is, just see reality as it really is. Problem is, we're just very blind. We're so short-sighted. We get a sort of pound coin and we hold it up to the sun in the sky, and we're so short-sighted, we see two round, shiny objects, and we think, there's not much between them, is there, really? I'm going to go with this. I can get my McFlurry from McDonald's with this. We really think. We just can't see the reality. So pray for eyes to see God as he really is. And remember this, remember that if you want to stop treasuring something, if you want to stop treasuring something, you see something in your life and you think, ah, it's controlling me, it's dragging me around by the heart. If you want to stop treasuring something, the only way is to start treasuring something else. Okay, your heart is like nature, it abhors a vacuum. Okay, so to stop treasuring one thing, you have to start treasuring something else. So to finish a sermon, you know, where we've been thinking about what do I treasure, let's just finish by asking, what does God treasure? What does God treasure? What does he think is so precious he would pay any price to have it? What did God, the God of the universe, look at and think to himself, anything will be worth it to save that? And nothing will be worth losing that for. What does God treasure? Well, the answer, the cross tells us, the answer is you. On the cross, Jesus looked at you and me, and he thought to himself, if only I can have them, if only I could have them, even facing hell itself would be worth it. See Jesus making you his treasure, and he will become yours. Let's pray.